It's one of those fears some travelers feel when going overseas. What happens if I need medical help and I can't tell the doctor what's wrong? Stop and think about it, and the very same situation can happen in this country, especially in states like ours, with many people who do not speak English as their primary language. Oregon law provides for medical interpreters and translators, but easier said than done. That requires training and numbers, and fully qualified translators are not always available. Helen Eby is with us. She's the president of the Oregon Society of Translators and Interpreters. Helen, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. And yeah, I almost wanted to introduce myself in Spanish so your listeners would get a taste of what it feels like to be in one of those places.
How's that?
Well, you know, when you go into a place where you don't understand the language and you just can't communicate, it's really difficult to even know what to say. So thank you for a great introduction.
No, sure. No problem. Let's talk about translators and interpreters generally, Armin. And your society obviously collects them in a sense. But how many of them are there in Oregon?
Oh, it's hard to say. I've heard quotes that there's about 3,500 medical interpreters. Interpreters transfer the message from one language to another orally, and translators do this in writing. So most people think translation is just transferring message from one language to another, but as far as a specialization, when we talk about doing it in a conversation, that's an interpreter, and when you're producing a written document, that's a translator.
Okay.
So there's about 70 or so members of the American Translators Association who live in Oregon. I'm a member of that association. And there's, according to David Cardona, quoted in the Oregonian several years ago, there were 3,500 medical interpreters in Oregon. But there's only a couple of hundred of them listed on the Oregon Health Authority Registry of Medical Interpreters. There's another 100 or so court interpreters listed on the Court Interpreter Services website roster. So it's hard to know.
All right. But the fact is, the major issue we're running into right now is that Oregon law requires medical translators or interpreters, and they're not frequently available?
That's a real problem. That's true. There's a lot of reasons for that, and one of them is, well, it's hard to know where to start.
Well, first of all, let's try to figure out a couple of basic issues here. So, I mean, obviously people come into the emergency room or the doctor's office. They need to be able to communicate
exactly
with the medical professional. So, I mean, it makes sense that there'd be Oregon law about this. But did the law come with any provision for money to pay translators, interpreters, and any programs to help certify them?
Wouldn't that be nice? I haven't seen anything like that, and when we've brought it up to the Oregon Health Authority to ask about that, they are remarkably quiet about it. I haven't heard answers. They say that they're looking for scholarships for medical interpreters, but you see, I think the answer is, the solution is probably going to be found in a different place. I was just looking up stats about the area of the state of Jefferson, which is where your listenership is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, let's see, Coos, Curry, Douglas, Jackson, Josephine, Klamath, and Lake Counties, more or less?
Yes, and Lane as well, in our case.
Okay. So anyway, just the counties I mentioned have about 37,000 people who speak a language other than English at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a little higher than the people who don't speak English very well, because some of those people are probably bilingual to some degree. So let's bring it down to 30,000 people who need some interpreting at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took a look at how many court-certified interpreters are in the area, and that's nine.
Nine
court-certified interpreters in those counties.
Stretching from Coos to Klamath, basically.
Exactly.
Wow.
And medical interpreters listed in the roster, I found 11, and only one of them was actually qualified. That means he's taken to Oregon. Qualified means they've taken 60 hours of training, and they have passed a language proficiency test that says that they know the language well enough to interpret.
And there's the other issue. I think we all tend to work on the assumption that Spanish is going to be the language most sought here, but that's not necessarily...
Oh, yes, and all of these are Spanish.
Okay, they are all Spanish. All right, then.
All of them. Every single one of them I checked. In the court, I didn't check so carefully, but in the medical, they're all Spanish.
Okay.
It's sad.
Yeah, so, that's a very small number. I mean, for 30,000 potential people here, then, and that's an assumption, then 11 medical interpreters and one of them certified.
Well, not even certified,
just qualified.
That means they've taken the... But you see, there's so many things that go into that. One is, I've received a call from an interpreting agency asking, hey, Helen, can you go to do this medical appointment? Well, let's see, I'm busy that day. Okay, can you recommend somebody else? Oh, sure, this person is court certified and medical certified. You know, she won't disappoint you. Can you tell me about somebody who's not certified, please?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I hung up on them. It was the only thing I could ethically do.
Why were they looking for somebody not certified? They're just looking for somebody cheaper? I mean, what's... Is
exactly.
There, okay.
Exactly. That's what happens. But you see, in the state of Oregon, I checked the whole, you know, what the stats for the state, and there were maybe 100 or so, a little over 100 certified medical interpreter, I mean, certified plus qualified medical interpreters in the whole state.
Mm-hmm.
Qualified means that you have passed a language proficiency test and you've taken 60 hours of training. Certified means beyond that, you have also taken a skills test that says you have the skills for medical interpreting. And that test is not available in all languages. So there are certain languages that you're only going to be able to get qualified interpreters. So when you add them all up, that's 100 people for, you know, out of 3,500 that are doing medical interpreters. So your chances of getting a qualified or certified interpreter in Oregon right now are very low. That's statewide.
Helen Eby is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the president of the Oregon Society of Translators and Interpreters. We're talking about the fact that there are very few medical interpreters available, even though they're supposed to be available for medical appointments by Oregon law. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we discuss the issue, 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So if there is nobody available, that sounds like is often the case, to do the interpretation for a person who does not speak English in a medical setting, who does the work? How does the message get across?
Well, they just take anybody in the building who speaks that language, or they call somebody on the phone and have interpreting by telephone. Now, the things that are going to drive progress in this are providing training, because training has... in-person training is what interpreters strongly prefer. Online training, to me, is sort of like learning how to swim by correspondence.
Huh.
Because think of it, in interpreting training live, you've got somebody to discuss things with. You can role play. And admittedly, role playing an interpreting setting in a classroom is a little bit like to a doctor doing a dissection is different from doing live surgery. But at least it's something. It gets you there. It gets you to understand things in a more practical way than just looking at something on a website. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Let's take a call here. We have Paul and Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about medical translators and interpreters with Helen Eby.
Good morning. You know, I had some practical experience with this and some observations. My significant other is a professional translator and interpreter from the Ukraine. She translates English, Russian, and German, as well as Ukrainian. And we went this path years ago at considerable expense. We sent her through a limited training program that was available in the Portland area. And what we found down here, at least, is that there is just not a viable market for it. We had enough barriers thrown up that perhaps the only way we could have made it work is to set up a phone in the Willamette Valley and have it ring down and have her travel up whenever it was needed, and that's not really practical because you needed to have people there at the time. So part of it is simply market. Now, Spanish, again, very different situation, but it seems to me that the Willamette Valley is a much more more fertile place for this. I'll take my answers to my comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for that, Paul. Appreciate it. Helen, your thoughts?
That's a great comment. The issue is that there are some languages that you're not going to be able to have a significant enough need for in all places. So interpreters do need to diversify their services, and providing translation is a great way to do it. Now, I'd recommend that she join the Oregon Society of Translators and Interpreters, ostiweb.org, because we are trying to feature translators and interpreters in all parts of the state so people can know who they are and how to find them.
Is it possible that there are people out there who could potentially do this medical work? I mean, obviously, you mentioned 60 hours of training, but they just haven't thought about it. I mean, they're quite good with Spanish, but it was never their primary job.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of place for people to do this as part of their job. When people hire bilingual employees, they're typically expecting them to do a certain level of interpreting on their job. And I would love to see training happen down in your area. It just hasn't happened much. And for people to travel up to Portland, or there's going to be a training course in Albany in the fall, that's closer, but it's still not close enough for you. So that's something I'd really like to see happen. The other thing is, I think people need to understand the value that proper interpreting brings. I mean, when you have interpreters who are professionals, who've gone through at least 40 hours of training, the error rate from medical appointment goes down from 22% to 12%. And when people have 100 hours of training, it goes down to 2%. Now, what does that mean? It means that you've got a lot less wasted time in appointments where you just miscommunicated. It means that the length of stay in the hospitals is reduced by 0.75 to a day and a half. So let's say that a day in the hospital in Oregon on the average, and I got this from a website online, is $2,500, and you spent $250 on your interpreter. That's a 10-to-1 return on investment.
I just can't imagine
not
what
bad.
It would be like. Yeah, it's not bad, but I'm just thinking about some of the situations. We're talking about the error rate here, and I can imagine why it would be high. I mean, it's hard for me to describe in English sometimes. Many of us, I think, go through this where it's like, well, it's this feeling that starts down here, and then I have to lean back because there's this wave of pain. And I mean, how would you say this in another language?
Well, that's why there's certain tricks that interpreters learn how to do. To be able to be accurate and complete, which is one of our ethics, we learn how to take notes, not notes like you take in a lecture hall, notes that will help you interpret that in 2 minutes. So they're very short term. They just help jog your memory to say everything in a complete way when you interpret in this conversation. We learn how to manage the flow of the conversation without actually becoming part of the conversation. That's one of the challenges for, let's say, a bilingual nurse who's got a great heart and knows the patient and knows the doctor, and it's just so tempting to go in and take over the session.
Mm-hmm.
But the doctor's going to be giving the diagnosis. And so managing the flow is really important. Learning how to keep a professional distance is also something we learn how to do in this type of training. And that's important because when an interpreter crosses that professional relationship boundary, which is very easy to do with somebody who speaks your language, then that person starts to ask the interpreter questions that are not appropriate, like, what do you think of this doctor? Should I really follow this treatment? Hey, don't tell the doctor this, but this is something that concerns me.
All right, so the point is to be a conduit and not be the initiator of the communication.
Exactly, and so when you learn certain skills and the reasons for applying those in a polite but professional way, that's just something you don't get out of a book. And discussion in class is really valuable for that. So I gave a training from January to May in Woodburn. And one of my students was already a nationally certified medical interpreting. But in Oregon, to be Oregon certified, you have to have 60 hours of training. So she came, and her first statement was, well, I'm here because I got to get my 60 hours of training. The first day she left saying, wow, this is cool. I'm actually learning stuff. Huh. I can hardly wait to come back next week. Another student in Hillsboro, started saying, oh, Helen, you know, I'm kind of slow. It takes me a while to learn things. I said, that's okay. That, you know, just do what you can. And then the next week she came back saying, hey, Helen, you know what? I applied what you told us this first day because I had an interpreting appointment that I didn't know how to approach. And I did exactly what you said. Guess what? It really worked. I was golden. So training really helps people with a lot of experience and people who are getting started.
So, Helen, we're getting short on time. I mean, is there somebody in a position to do something about the shortage of medical interpreters, and is something being done?
Well, we are offering training in a lot of places. Well, I'm going to be offering training in Albany in the fall. There's training being offered in Portland. Training is growing, and so that's a good thing. And as far as raising the rate for what medical interpreters are paid, that's also a critical thing that has to happen. But I think that's going to probably happen more naturally as people see that people with qualifications provide a better service. So,
and under the law, who is supposed to pay the translator, the interpreter, rather?
That's difficult. I think I've seen a line in Medicare that provides reimbursement for medical interpreters. So that should be checked out. But in any event, if spending $250 saves you $2,500, it's not a bad way to save as a CCO that is supposed to try to maximize the investment and cost for the whole medical system.
All right. And people can find your organization at ostiweb.what?
O-R-G. It's O-R-G. An organization.
Okay. ostiweb.org, which is already posted on our Facebook page, and jeffexchange.org. Thank you so much, Helen Eby, for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you. It was great.
You bet. That'll do it for this Hour of the Exchange. We'll talk about Lake Abert in hour number two and why it's disappearing.